It's Saturday, August, what is today? The 21st, 2010, 10:06 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, geek news, and anything else we can come up with. It's time now for Geek Speak.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, GNIhosting.com.
And once again, having technical difficulties because I haven't turned on the item. So that abbreviated theme song was by Michael Newman of Pet Star Music. Thank you very much for that theme. Welcome to Geek Speak. Bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity, I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind that the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. And join the car guys, Click and Clack, the Tappet Brothers, for their advice on things automotive and just about everything else on Car Talk, every Sunday at 9 a.m. right here on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. Santa Cruz on KUSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts, as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. So, good morning, everyone. Once again, this is Miles Elam. In the air room with me are Lyle Troxell, technical coordinator for high tech art at UCSC. Good morning, Lyle.
Good morning, Miles.
Lindsay Lonnie, system analyst.
Good morning, Miles.
Oh, just a little bit louder.
Good morning, Miles.
Trying to get my levels here. Ben Jaffe, freelance media guy and Stanford instructor.
Good morning.
I heard you weren't a Stanford instructor anymore.
Not anymore. As of yesterday, I lost my voice on the last week of several, like, 8, 9 something weeks of summer teaching.
Wait, so why is it worse to lose your voice on the last week as opposed to, you know, well, not giving the kids their money's worth on the previous week? Like,
well, it's just like you're running a race and then you stumble in the last foot, you know, and you fall. And you're just like, ah,
so much better
man.
To stumble right off the blocks, huh?
Well, no. At least then, well, never mind. The metaphor only goes so far.
Fair enough.
What do you do there, Ben?
What did I do there?
Yeah, at Stanford. Mean? I know that you teach at Stanford. But
I was teaching with a company called Digital Media Academy, classes for basically 9 years old to 60 years old. Various different classes. So we had different programs and teaching various multimedia classes like web design and all of that fun stuff. I just taught an After Effects class last week, which was awesome, making visual effects all week. Very, very fun. So,
yeah. However, if you are 90 years old and you do want a class on Photoshop use and things like that.
Yeah, they'll do 90.
Yeah, still. Yeah, it's great. So let's start off with some geek news. Ben.
So I have a geek news that I wish I could hit a Facebook dislike button on. Now, the reason I make that really stupid joke is that it actually has to do with the dislike button on Facebook, or rather the lack of a dislike button on Facebook. So there is actually a scam that is spreading very rapidly, as scams tend to do on social networks like Facebook. Basically, it says someone on Facebook posts, "I just got the dislike button, so now I can dislike all of your dumb posts, LOL. Double exclamation point, and then it has a URL, and you click on the URL and it says, do you want to add the dislike button to your Facebook so you can dislike things? Now here's the thing, it's not actually the official dislike button as much as it tries to convince you it is, but people are falling for it. So when you click to quote unquote get the dislike button, then it posts the same thing, the same blurb on your Facebook, which then spreads it to all of your friends and things like that. So very, very bad news. It's very, very easy for scams like this to propagate in social networks, especially when you think that everything that your friends post are actually posted by your friends, when in reality, a lot of times they're posted by the applications that
Farmville.
Farmville.
Those things.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess it depends on how you define scam.
Yeah, actually, but this is something within the tech community that everyone knows about, but the general community, I'm not so sure. So mm-hmm. I want to do a public service announcement. If you play Farmville, you are spamming all of your friends. If they haven't complained to you yet, please
stop.
Please. In Santa Cruz alone, there are so many community gardens and things like that that if you really have the extra time to be working with farming and trying to plant stuff and water and have that maintenance, please volunteer at a community garden or get a plot there or the like. It's so much so much more rewarding.
Wait,
in my opinion.
Miles, are you saying there are actually real farms that you could farm on?
Right.
That's ludicrous. That's absurd.
It's in that big real room reality? With the blue ceiling and the really, really overwhelming light.
Nice. So anyway, that's one bit of Facebook news. And also, just to throw this out there, it's not just the dislike button that's a scam like this. There are tons of other scams. Like, there's one that's student attacked his teacher and nearly killed him. There's one that says the biggest and scariest snake, and one says the world's worst McDonald's customer. If you see things like that, just don't click on them. If you see anything having to do with Justin Bieber doing this or doing that, don't click on it, because it's probably that scam. And everyone falls
for it.
You know?
What are you going to get? You know,
yeah,
Justin
yeah.
Bieber. You don't need that.
And I mean, like, so I mean, also to throw this out there, I fell for one of these scams. It was really easy. Like, I didn't know about this particular vector. I didn't realize that it could spread this way. And so I clicked on something that looked interesting, and it posted it to my Facebook. And I was like, that's not okay. So I immediately went through and found it and got rid of it and everything. But be careful, you know, because it's easy. And then a brief other news story is that Facebook just launched another feature. So not only are we seeing the implications of Facebook and social networks being as they are and the potential issues with that, but also Facebook is continuing to grow. So it's
right. This actually touches on Lyle's story, and I do mm-hmm. actually want to hear his perspective on it.
All right. Foursquare, there's actually a few others, these geolocation-type applications, and Foursquare is a pretty simple
one. The geolocation one. Being?
the where on the planet you're talking about. So the geography of the planet, of the place that you're on.
Or more specifically, in this case, if you're in a web browser on your phone being...
Yeah, I'll describe how the app works.
If you're on a, sure. Yeah, if you're on a phone, it says, do you want this app to be able to use your location
sure.
if you're on a website?
So we're talking about, you know, we're talking yeah. about the basically... our phones now support latitude and longitude.
Those
Somebody
words, yeah.
Latitude and longitude.
Thank you so much. What a great host. And therefore, the phone can submit with websites and with apps where you are. And this is a neat feature when you want to start connecting with people. So
not
Foursquare,
just apps, websites as well.
I web said web browsers and
okay,
apps.
Okay, just, yeah, just yeah. saying.
Play back it's, the podcast. All right, so in any case, the Foursquare app is this kind of social tool that allows you to very quickly with your phone say, I'm at this location. So you make a new entry, and it looks around the location you currently are and kind of lists all the businesses. So this morning, for example, I did the link here in the other room, and KOSP came up as one of the fourth entries or so in this location. And I said, yeah, that's where I am, kind of checked in. And then all my other friends on Foursquare can see where I was, and it's kind of like a competition thing. So if you go out a lot, if you go to a movie, if you go to a, like yesterday, we would have, if we used Foursquare, we might have known that we were both seeing They Might Be Giants last night at the Rio together, Miles, without actually running into each other. In any case, so it's kind of
except for the fact that I am extremely wary about location-based services like this.
It is a little dangerous. So Foursquare has been really popular in, I would say, probably a younger crowd than me, probably. Ben knows a lot about it, but
yeah.
The thing is, Facebook just launched Places, which is a feature that basically does everything Foursquare does. I think the headline, which was the funnier one for me, was Facebook Places, like Foursquare, but without the fun. The thing is, Foursquare, it's actually kind of simple and fun to use. Well, the thing is, it's not a big deal, what they're doing. It's really simple code. And to exemplify that, Mayanaka Lahari posted on the 18th a how to do Foursquare with 9 lines of code, and he used Perl. Perl's a scripting language which can always be obscure and crazy. So he's got this great article about, and his requirements was it's got to do no standard libraries, must accept a venue ID and a base GPS coordinates, and it also must perturb GPS coordinates a little each time, so slightly change a little bit so that there's not as much exact location information, and must check into specific location, things of that nature. In any case, so he was able to do it in, yeah, it looks like nine lines of code, of Perl code. Now, if you read the code, it's insanely hard to understand, but that's how simple this little tool is. So Facebook adding it and potentially killing Foursquare, it's an example of the way you launch an application. That's what's successful, not necessarily the technology behind it.
The Perl statements were how to games Foursquare, which would be if you want to check in a whole bunch of times over and over and over and over again,
right.
And become the
and
new.
Win.
And win, basically.
Right.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's the thing about Foursquare is that it's a game. I mean, that's the idea is that you're competing with your friends.
Right. This whole thing reminds me of a conversation I had with a coworker recently, which is, there is a site out there. I've unfortunately forgotten the URL. I'll have to ask when I get back to work on Monday. But it was basically Rob Me. It was a website you go to, and it's like tracking just by Google searches, looking at things that you posted and looking at geolocation and saying, oh, you're not at home. I can go rob you now.
Wow.
It's called pleaserobme.com.
Thank you. Pleaserobme.com. Yeah. And it's obviously a joke site.
Yeah.
It's him putting up the information, but it's something that has a didactic purpose behind it, which is we are giving this information to say where we are at all times.
The tagline for pleaserobme.com is raising awareness about oversharing.
Right.
Like you give too much information, other people can find out what's going on.
NPR was covering this as well. The concept of if you friended your boss, don't use the service ever, because that day that you play hooky, that you say, oh, I can't come in, I'm really, really sick, and then they, like, I'm at Disneyland. Yeah.
Look at my kayak, how shiny it is.
Yeah, exactly. Or not just where you are, but also where you aren't. You know, if you're not at home, then you can be robbed, especially if you live alone, you know, and that's also pretty easy information to get from something like Facebook, if you're living with someone or not.
Have you guys heard of Google coming out with a service like this? Because they just bought iLike, and they were talking
like.com.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And they were talking about how they're going to use that as the ability to, as you move around, basically show what you like and market to you, geared on that. So
maybe that's two different stories of Google buying stuff. It's buying stuff so quickly. Yeah, it is. I like. Okay, so funny. It's a different story I was thinking about.
Yeah.
I like in Lala for a music service thing. Google's doing so much, it's kind of hard to keep up with, you know, and also like what's good and what's not so great.
Okay, so now that we were discussing the machinations of big companies and their effect upon our lives, Lindsay.
Yes, so Apple. Basically, let me check here. They applied for a patent covering an elaborate series of measures to automatically protect iPhone owners from thieves and unauthorized users. The patent is titled Systems and Methods for Identifying Unauthorized Users of an Electronic Device. So the caveat here is that it sounds great in theory, but it also protects the phones against being jailbroken, which supposedly recently these things were accepted from copyright enforcement. One possible response that they listed was activating a camera, taking the geotag location of the camera or of the phone, taking the picture, and then sending the picture and then wiping the phone. So that could be, you know, they're saying, what if somebody's in their room and it triggers these features? And recently you brought up that, do you remember that thing where the school kids got the school laptops and it was taking video of them in their rooms and they got sued? And so I doubt
it wasn't just taking video of them in the room. It was taking video of them at home in their home living rooms.
Right.
Not just a classroom.
So they're saying the only way to detect these kinds of actions is like high memory usage on the phone using an accelerometer and like a heartbeat monitor. Different things like that are proposed items. And so there's all kinds of things an actual user could do that might trigger these. So I don't really think this thing is going to get approved, but it's just kind of scary that they're actually even applying for this kind of stuff.
Are these patents that they're applying for?
Yes, it's a patent that they're applying for.
Well, it seems like a pretty neat idea to have their phone be aware of whether it's you or not by the way you move and the way your heartbeat is and such.
Another
it's
thing
kind of creepy,
was but... voice printing was another thing that they're proposing. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But if
Miles, you and I were talking about that kind of bio detection stuff and how hard it is to do, right? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And so what if they wipe your phone and take a picture of you, you know, just because your heartbeat is increased, you know, I don't know how I feel about that.
Get all excited. Oh, look, a dolphin. My phone just died.
Yeah.
Oh, look, I just won the lottery. I can't tell anyone anymore.
Yeah. My bank account just locked me out.
Yeah,
wow. So sometimes I feel like we put too much credence in how important our phones are.
Oh, they're going to get more important.
Okay.
I don't know.
Someday we'll be voting through them.
Right? That's another thing is I was getting a ride to the bus station from a coworker, and that day I had forgotten my phone. It turned out it was okay. Like, I didn't have my phone. No big deal. Like, I'm at work. I have an internet connection anyway, and it's not like I like talking to anyone. And I have a work extension, you know. At the same time, when we were driving and we're trying to find directions, I realized I don't have my phone. I can't look up what's the best route, what's traffic like, things like that. And I realized how much I took it for granted. I've only had this device for a few years and was also extending it out to the internet. This idea of right now we have instant access to the whole of human knowledge at your fingertips at any moment in time.
And power.
Right. Something that was completely inconceivable prior to, say, 1995.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I had a similar experience. I only got my smartphone probably, I think, 6 or 7 or 8 months ago. Really not very long ago. You were saying a couple of years for you. But even now, like, I still find myself feeling a little bit lost if I can't check the traffic conditions, you know, because it bothers me to think that I might go a route that's less efficient or something like that, or if I get lost, you know,
or
to not have it with me.
For me, since I drive over the hill to San Jose every weekday, it's that, how much do I want to miss of 17? How can I?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
When do you check that? Like when you're en route or when you're stopped?
I check it before I leave the house.
Uh-huh.
And you know how long it'll take approximately, roughly.
Yeah, actually, it's before I leave the house and I get a good idea, and then.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm living up in Berkeley, San Francisco area, and so I'm occasionally going down to Palo Alto, Campbell, sometimes down here. And there are like 5 different routes I could take, and they're all approximately equivalent as far as time. You know,
unless
so
there's
knowing,
no overturned semi.
Exactly, right. Yeah. No. Yeah, actually, I got stuck behind that overturned semi on the 17, awesome. Yeah, a couple days. Was that Wednesday? Wednesday, yeah, I think it was.
I'll go with that.
Or maybe so. Thursday. A semi overturned on the 17, and I got stuck behind it for
closing
hours.
Down for 3.5 hours. Yeah.
Were you up in Santa Cruz when the
five
used
and a half
to
hours.
Be this wonderful oh. website? It's one of the first blog sites, before blog was the term, where a guy would just, every day, he'd commute with a friend. He had a digital camera. This is when digital cameras were really rare. And I can't remember the name of the site, but it's like, what you're looking at on 17. And all the traffic problems on Highway 17, his friend would drive and he'd take a picture of it and then post it on his blog. So the reason why you're 20 minutes late for this is what it was. You know, it's always like a car on the side of the road with a flat tire. It's like nothing.
Except you'd have to check it before you left your house
It was always a day later. It wasn't.
Oh, okay.
It wasn't.
Oh, right, because he couldn't post
it. Right. It was just like a history of like, you know, you annoyed me because you slowed me down looking at this tire. So here's the photograph. You can save it forever and enjoy yourself.
The wall of shame.
The wall of shame.
Yeah, and the reason I bring it up is because we were talking about a company having a kill switch on there, which I think that there are legitimate uses for a kill switch. If a phone is – someone has hacked the phone and it is going out of control and starting to do actual cybernetic damage. I mean, they're actual – like going into networks, having the equivalent of code red.
Because if it's cybernetic damage, data's going to be pissed.
Well, no, I mean the equivalent of that code red virus back in the late 90s.
That wiped drives and
And like totally took it to different organizations. A lot of people have their iPhones in a business environment now.
We found out recently that Google, even Android OS, can wipe. You know, they can turn off apps remotely. Mm-hmm. It seems like a really important thing when you've got little microcomputers that can be stolen.
But this whole idea of a biofeedback. Doing a kill switch and thinking about how much we rely on it now, how
then
much we use it.
Why aren't you okay with Microsoft shutting down your computer?
I don't know. I'm just not. I don't know if I'm actually that okay with the phone turn off thing, but
actually,
I see the reason for it.
Actually, I am okay with regard to an ISP seeing virus data going through and then shutting off that
they
port.
They have pricked their network.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, and carriers are not really in that position right now to do that. Like cell phone carriers aren't really. It seems like they haven't really taken those measures, right? Whereas ISPs have, maybe in some cases. It seems for some reason that the
except
the phones,
that our cell phone carriers are many times our ISP as well. So
well, that's true. That's true. At least with the iPhone and many of the Android devices.
I'd be curious to hear from someone at AT&T to see like what technical measures they have for that type of thing.
You know, I also feel like there is somewhat of a difference between a kill switch on a computer versus a kill switch on a phone. Namely that with a computer, you have more control over it. You know, if you are geekily minded, I'll say, you can go in and you can kind of, you know, root out the virus on your own if you want, or you can disable this and this and this to protect yourself. Whereas with a phone, you really don't have very much control over it.
You're basically saying because the phone companies and the distributors and such of phones restrict your access so much to the OS and the hardware itself, therefore they need to be able to take care of it for you. That's the basic argument, which makes sense.
Yeah, I wouldn't say that's my final argument, okay. But just off the cuff, I see at least that distinction between computers and smartphones, mini computers.
Miles, this reminded me of the bio, we're talking about biodetection, like biofeedback, or detecting whether a person is who they are. And a while ago—
We were talking about in the context of authentication, right?
Yeah. Quite a while ago, we chatted about BayFed, which is a local community bank here, and Bay Federal Credit Union, which I use. And, oh, great, now I've told everybody and I'm able to hack in. I'm like, oh, man, I should have said that. I might use it.
And your
I
member number
yesterday.
Is. And your number. And your checking, checking number is.
They switched over to flash-based authentication, which is really annoying because I can't do it on my phone. But the reason they did that is they do detecting on patterns of your typing. And if your typing doesn't match what your typing normally matches, it triggers up more questions, more security questions. And though I find it annoying, it's highly functional. I mean, it definitely, if I'm, you know, banking under the influence or something, it will know. But, I mean, the thing is, most of the time, lately, it just seems to always be triggering these questions. I don't know why, and I'm always looking at, like, am I typing the right direction? Like, I need to understand the algorithm because it's driving me nuts. So I'm always making slight mistakes to say, will it catch that? Anyway.
Yeah, you're a geek, I'd say.
I'd say so.
It's pretty safe to say.
Like, I'm trying to do something on my online, and it stops me, and I go, ooh, interesting. And I've totally lost track of what I was doing.
Not to mention we're all on a radio show called Geek Speak.
That's true.
That's
and I got that tattoo, too.
Right. So coming up after the break, we have some astronomy news and general particle physics news and solar toothbrushes. Dun, dun, dun.
Those are hot, too.
But at this point, we're going to take a break and mention that KOSP co-sponsors the Blue Ocean Film Festival Tuesday, August 24th through Sunday, August 29th, featuring more than 80 films, taking viewers into the ocean and around the world, from big wave surfing to deep sea exploration, plus ocean-related events and activities throughout Monterey. Information is available at blueoceanfilmfestival.org.
I've got a geek bit if you want it.
Yes, I would love a geek bit.
Woohoo! A while ago, we were asked by the producer of Podcast Squared to do an interview with them. And it's just a really cool podcast that actually interviews other podcasts. So Al and I got interviewed via Skype. And it was fun. And the link's up on the show page. So if you want to listen to an interview about Geek Speak, Podcast Squared has an episode of that.
Very cool. Also cool, Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Santa Cruz Electronics, offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. You're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KOSP. With me in the air room are Lyle Troxell, Ben Jaffe, and Lindsay Lonnie. So, next up, I believe, is Ben.
Yeah, I got a pretty cool piece of news. This just makes me giddy with geek happiness.
Is it like really, itchy and painful?
Yeah, that was awkwardly stated, or good said. So the moon is shrinking. It turns out that the moon has, and who knows what exactly.
Okay, when
this
stars
means,
shrink, it's really a cause for alarm. It's going to go nova. So what's up?
Yeah, the moon. I mean, well, yeah.
Less,
the moon's kind of
less werewolves. That's good.
No, fewer, but.
Oh, yeah, touche.
Yeah, I was thinking, should I pull a Miles here? Or, I mean, he's busy hosting.
Hey, I kept silent. Don't pull me into your own debauchery.
So, over recent geological
maybe
time.
Maybe I meant that they'd be more diminutive in nature, and therefore there'd be less body mass of werewolves. You don't know.
Moving on, the moon is shrinking. I really want to hear about this.
Yeah, so over recent geological time, it's shrunk by around 100 meters. So that's not a huge amount. You know, it's not huge. It's not bad. It's not like the moon's going away or anything like that.
But over geological time, this is over a long time. This is
like
the range of age of the human branch of the species type of
Recent geological time doesn't mean the last couple months or the last couple years or the last couple thousands of years. It's like a long, long, long period of time. But yeah, so we don't have much to worry about because the moon shrinkage is about 0.003% of the diameter of the moon. So it's not a big deal. But it's kind of interesting the way we know that. And I actually found this on the Bad Astronomy blog, Phil Plait's fantastic astronomy blog. Yeah,
yeah, highly recommended.
So, and I mentioned that for a moment, and you'll see in a moment. But the way we know this is that so if you take a sheet of paper on a flat desk or something and you kind of push the edges together, then it'll form a little bit of a wrinkle in the middle, right? And that's kind of what's happened with the moon in some sense. Along a thrust fault to kind of create, and if you're familiar with geology, similar things happen on Earth with mountains when plates come together or pull apart, and you end up with these scarps or these cliffs along the surface of the moon. And by looking at how many of them there are, we can kind of tell how much the moon has been shrinking.
I remember seeing when I was reading an article about this. I don't know if it was the same article. The analogy they were giving was, think of a peach that's started to dry a little bit. And so the skin, there's too much skin for the body of the peach underneath it. That's the type of wrinkling and mm-hmm. and like we're seeing.
Yeah, definitely similar to that. The other thing is that the theory as to why this is happening is that the moon is actually a little bit warm inside. Not tremendously warm by, you know, the sun standards, but it does have some
hopefully not
some heat in it. Yeah, or we'd be bombarded from two directions and blasted out. But the deal is that the moon is actually also cooling very, very slowly, radiating just a little bit of heat. And that is proposed as the theory for one of the theories for why the moon is actually shrinking. Now, the reason I mentioned that I found this on the Bad Astronomy blog are twofold. One, everyone should know about the Bad Astronomy blog. It's where I find many of my astronomy news stories. And a lot of times I'll find an astronomy news story and then go to Bad Astronomy and get more information than is in the popular science article or something like
that.
And
you're going to put the URL up on the site today?
Indeed,
so
I will.
So people can go check it out?
And the more important and more interesting thing is that Phil Plait, the guy who runs this blog, is actually now on the Discovery Channel with a television show. And so he's been kind of talking about this for a while. He wasn't able to say very much about it.
Right, he announced it at TAM-8, though.
But he announced that it existed at TAM-8. He announced that it was a project he was working on. But the only new thing we know is that August 29th, that is not this coming Sunday, like tomorrow, but the Sunday after at 10 p.m., and you can check your local listings if you want to watch this. It's probably going to be a pretty cool show because pretty much everything Phil Plait does.
Check your local listings because you will want to watch this.
You will want to watch this.
Phil Plait is awesome.
He's pretty cool. This is the very brief description they have for
the show.
It's called Bad Universe.
Oh, great.
Which kind of goes with the bad astronomy thing. And the description is, 65 million years ago, an asteroid bigger than Mount Everest slammed into the Earth, wiping out the dinosaurs. Are we in for the same fate? Phil Plait investigates the possibility and tests some explosive measures that just may save our planet. So pretty fun, interesting-looking show, and I'm sure it's going to be packed with a lot of actual science instead of the faux science you see in movies and sci-fi.
Or on GeekSpeak.
Sure. Yeah, we're feeling deprecating today.
That happened a long time ago.
The 65 million years ago?
Yeah, that's a long time ago.
No, it's just in a week and a day.
That's, oh, okay. Gotcha.
Lyle.
Yeah. Speaking of a long time ago. So 13 and a half or so billion years ago, the universe became a lot larger than it was once. We don't actually know how it started, but it got large quickly. The Big Bang is what we call that. And there's some strange side effects to our universe that we're always trying to figure out why it is the way it is. And probably all of you know what antimatter is. I'm sure, Ben, you do just because of Star Trek, right?
Yeah, of course. That's what powered the Enterprise.
There you go. Thank you.
First and foremost.
So antimatter is a particles that are have inverse properties of normal matter. So a proton, which is the positive charge inside of atoms, there's an antiproton. And you can collide these things together. When they actually interact, they explode in a lot of energy, shooting out to oppositely traveling direction gamma rays.
Or rather, each one has a mass, as it were, like the proton, the antiproton. And when they meet, the mass
turns into energy.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's the thing is the whole E equals MC squared energy, mass to energy calculation of Einstein's is very much in effect when you do this. And so you get a lot of energy out of it. It's probably the best way to get energy, if you will. The side effect of taking an antimatter and matter particle and interacting them, you get a lot of energy, period. That's it. We also, the recent study on a, they started colliding this to determine what kind of stuff is this, what kind of stuff happens at the output of this explosion. And of course, the energy that's produced is so immense that sometimes it coalesces or it coalesces back into particles. So you get two protons, which are relatively heavy particles, interacting with proton and antiproton, interacting, annihilating each other, tons of energy, and then the fluxum that gets created after that is a whole bunch of different types of particles. So the FemLab Tevatron particle accelerator in
Fermilab.
They'd just been in Illinois. They've been running these tests, and they discovered that when the antiparticle and the particle collide, about 1% more of the fluxum afterwards is matter instead of antimatter, and that would explain why our universe is populated with matter instead of antimatter, because it theoretically, we could be reversed pretty easily.
So they're not exact?
They're not the same. And the why they're not the same is very strange. It doesn't, there's not a, we don't have a really good understanding of it, but at least we can document and see how when you collide the two, you get a small percentage more of matter, which is neat because that means really there was a lot more matter and mass in the early ages of the universe.
Well, or just a lot more energy.
Yeah, a lot more energy.
And then
yeah. The question's always been is why does there matter at all? Why didn't it all just get turned into energy?
Yeah.
And this side effect is an example of why.
I find this just so mind-blowing that we can do an experiment and see this on what we would say a pretty large scale with the amount of energy, but really universally, I will say, it's a very, very small scale, right? And the experiment itself works. They're observing the single phenomena that led to the creation of matter, which is what we're all made of, and everything that we do.
I remember
a
great story.
It's amazing.
I remember a great story about symmetry in matter and antimatter. And the particles are very similar. You can't really see, but they have reverse properties, of course. And so if we were to meet an alien race remotely, and then we were to run into each other and actually interact with each other, we could transmit almost everything about the universe, about ourselves, to them digitally, except we wouldn't actually be able to tell them antimatter versus matter. The only thing that's different is one of them has a certain type of spin. So we'd have all our social norms hooked up. We'd figure this all out, and we were going to meet each other. And if they put their left hand out to shake, don't touch them because they'd be antimatter. I don't know, I just like that story.
So all the practical things you learn on Geek Speak, you know?
That's like, right. All right. Alien
heads up in the clouds. Let's get back down to Earth. Lindsay?
All right. So are we talking about this amazing solar toothbrush?
We can talk about whatever new story you want to do. That just happened to be the one I put up.
Okay.
I want to hear about the solar I really do.
So bad.
All right. I wasn't going to talk about this one, but I will since everyone's so entertained by it. Basically, a Japanese scientist came up with this toothbrush that is solar-powered and does not require toothpaste. It does require some water, but, you know, there's fluid in your mouth, and that will work as well. 15 years ago, he patented this, and basically it contained a titanium dioxide rod in the neck of the brush just below the bristles. So when light shines on the wet rod, it released electrons. And the electrons reacted with the acid in the mouth, which breaks down plaque, and so you didn't need toothpaste. He's got a new version out more recently, which is the new and improved version, which has a twice the chemical punch, quote unquote, compared to the original. So protruding from the base of the brush is a solar panel, which transmits electrons to the top of the toothbrush through a lead wire.
Hopefully not a lead wire.
Right, a lead wire, not a lead
wire. Okay, so I know how much toothbrushes cost at CVS. How much is this gem going to cost?
They're currently testing it on 120 teens, and it's not on the market yet.
I really wish I was a teen and in that study.
I know. I love how they specified teens in the study.
Is it producing free-floating ions? Is that what it's doing?
I believe it's ionic,
yes. It's because teens have more plaque.
Oh, that's why.
They don't brush. So there's they also incentive.
They also eat very large pixie sticks. And
exactly.
What's with the pixie sticks?
Pixie sticks has come up several times today before the show. So
they say it needs about as much light as a solar-powered calculator. So.
Oh, really minimal?
Yeah.
Huh.
So I forced you to do the solar-powered toothbrush. So Do a story that you want to do.
Okay, now I get to do a real
news
story.
Wait, can
we
say one more story? Thing about the solar panel, solar toothbrush?
What more is there to be said?
Well, sure.
Why? Okay, go on. Sorry.
Because toothpaste.
Toothpaste is such a pain, right?
All right. If you've ever had a thing of toothpaste explode in your bag, you know why. Hey, I was traveling through Europe, you know? Like, I had to carry my toothpaste with me, and, I mean, that could have been bad, you know? Right.
Mm-hmm. They do come in hard shell versions for
and
travel.
Smaller ones.
What if there was an apocalypse and there was no more toothpaste?
Hiding toothpaste in your shoes.
What if,
work,
let's
then?
Say, oh, I don't know, some transportation agency said you can't take toothpaste through the security screening?
I'm sure a titanium toothbrush will pass no problem, though. What's that?
Well, maybe if it's not sharp, I'm
was
sure they would.
Was it titanium or platinum? Sorry.
Well, the catalyst was supposed to be titanium.
Titanium,
right?
Yeah, titanium.
Is this change being driven by the aviation industry?
Yeah, it could be. You never know.
No more toothpaste.
They don't want the toothpaste.
So for a few $100, you too can get past TSA restrictions.
But your breath will not be minty fresh unless you chew gum. Mm. So you still need an accessory if you want
to. Or you could eat mint. Can you bring mint in through customs?
All right, moving on.
Oh my God.
Okay. Moving on.
All right, so this is another one of those be afraid, be very afraid stories to balance out the joke story. Apparently, Network Solutions was supplying a widget for business purposes to all of its users and supplying it also on all parked domains, and they found out that it was spreading malware. So they're estimating that about 5 million domains were serving this malware that had parked domains on Network Solutions. Of course, as soon as they were alerted, they took the widget down. It's the Small Business Success Index widget from growsmartbusiness.com. And they're saying now, I don't know if you remember, but WordPress was getting into a bunch of trouble because there was a widget serving up malware. And it turns out that this is because of this Network Solutions thing, because they were only WordPress that were hosted on the Network Solutions.
Okay, so Network Solutions is domain name server. And that means that they are the ones that translate a name like yahoo.com into an IP address. And they're the biggest still. Mm-hmm. And when people want a website and potentially want to sell it later, they register it and park it, right? Or use it later.
Exactly.
So Miles has I love pixiesticks.com, and he's been parking it for years because he hasn't made the money scan yet. So when you park it, you can turn on a few features, like put on ads and things of that nature, and these widgets, so that when people visit there, potentially you'll make a little bit of money off of the ads. Right?
Exactly.
And this is a widget provided by the biggest domain name server, and it was malware.
Exactly.
Nasty.
And as of the beginning of this week, only about 50% of antivirus was catching it. I'm sure a lot more of them are catching it now, but, you know, update people.
Okay.
So there. Toothbrushes and scary stuff.
So there.
I've got more scary stuff, too, for later, you know, whenever you get bored.
Whenever you get bored. Doom and gloom.
Yeah, I actually should have done this announcement before or while we were doing the astronomy stuff, but I'll do it now. Jack Horkheimer, also known as the Ambassador to the Stars, he was on public television as the Stargazer. Unfortunately, he passed away yesterday afternoon at the age of 72. He will be sorely missed, although he does have some pre-recorded episodes that will still be airing. So I highly recommend checking it out if you can, if you have it in your area. I haven't checked local listings, so I don't know if it comes to Santa Cruz or not. And he will be sorely missed.
Hopefully they'll put it on YouTube so we can see it.
And then in other news, Ben.
Oi. So I just want to talk about solid state drives really fast. Solid state drives are basically hard drives that don't spin, right? So when you drop your laptop, a couple things can break.
Wait, hard drives spin?
Hard drives that don't have spinning elements inside of them.
I was more referring to the fact of with a lot of people, you don't, unless you're a computer person, you don't necessarily know that hard drives spin.
Yeah, so so when you push the power button on your computer, you know, maybe it'll make a beeps out or a bong sound, but you also hear kind of a as it kind of spins up the hard drive, as well as the fans.
Those are
the
or if you're hearing a
that's not a good sounds.
Yeah, if your computer's
these are all
not
your
working.
Hard drive. This is all because and many system administrators refer to it as spinning rust. That it's this iron oxide covering on a platter as it's going around, you're reading information.
Yeah, so the two main moving elements in your computer, the three main moving elements are the optical drive with your CDs and your DVDs, right? We all know those spin. The fans, which it makes sense that they spin, and then the hard drives. And as you mentioned, yeah, many people don't know that they'd spin. And so if you drop your computer, one of the things that's going to most likely break if you drop your computer is the hard drive, because the platter inside the hard drive that's spinning at 7,200 revolutions every minute, right, crashes on the head that's reading it. And you can get like a big
gouge.
Gouge. That's what I was looking for. A big gouge into your platter, and then you know your data is pretty much just gone, and you can't read it.
It's gone to the chaos.
So that's the doom and gloom portion of this. Of course, solid state drives come to the rescue. So solid state, or in some ways, solid state drives are much like the USB flash drives, or FOBs, or memory sticks, or USB keys. A million different names for those, and they don't have any moving parts. Right, you just plug them in, and they just appear, and they read, and they write, and they work. Right.
Yeah. Wouldn't put them in a paint shaker, but. General
Although,
wear and tear.
I mean, you know, they've survived some pretty incredible things in some tests. So, I mean, I think going through the wash,
everybody,
maybe.
Yeah, everybody that's owned ones washed it once on their jeans.
Well, those USB flash drives, which are like $10 or $15, yeah, sure. The SSD drives that Ben is talking about are very expensive as compared to hard drive capacity. So
yeah, so right now they're...
You don't want to put them in the washing machine.
the very cheapest you can get them is probably like $3 per gigabyte, whereas, you know, you look at... the hard drives that spin, you look at typical standard hard drives, and they're, I don't know, like $70 for a 500 gig drive. That's like 10 cents a gig.
For a laptop drive, you can actually get $70 for a terabyte or more.
Oh, wow. Yeah. Prices really are coming down fast. So anyway, SanDisk just debuted the world's smallest 64 gig SSD. Actually, it's the world's smallest SSD, period. And it's smaller than the size of a postage stamp, and it weighs less than a paperclip. It supports the SATA the SATA standard, which means you can solder it right onto the motherboard. So things are moving really fast. Itty-bitty, teeny-tiny thing, and it supports basically everything that it's spinning current parts.
So we may be seeing some more convergence, just like we saw video cards being subsumed into the motherboard and lines and stuff like that. Maybe
start
seeing storage.
Enough. That's small enough to be, I mean,
you just
small.
Put it as a chip on your motherboard and not even, yeah. So
and
that's
64 gigs, too.
You can get it
if the OS can handle it and you can use it effectively, it could really speed up performance, too.
Yeah, yeah.
Are they really pricey, then?
Oh, of course. I mean, solid state drives are just... pricey.
Brand new technology. Is it pricey? Brand new technology.
Well, you know, it's been around for a while, but it's very slowly approaching the mechanical hard drive price point. It's just not nearly there yet.
We're still a ways away.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. It's not nearly there yet, but it is approaching that.
You know, since we're talking about hard drives, and back up your computer. Please back up your computer.
Back up your data. So one more SSD bit of news. So there were some roadmaps in Intel that were leaked, right? Roadmaps just being plans, basically. And they are planning on releasing some very, very large SSDs. Currently, they have 80 and 160 gigabyte models in their high-performance SSDs. Those are ones that actually go faster than the hard drives that you usually have in your computer, which spin at 7,200 RPM and, you know, et cetera. But turns out that they actually have a new design, assuming these roadmaps are accurate, 160 gigs, 300 gigs, and 600 gigs for these SSDs.
Are these laptop size?
I am not sure what size they are. Okay. But yeah, I mean, even still. And also, it looks like I just found an actual sentence on this. It says 100 gig SSDs are below the $400 price point. So it's about maybe 350 a gig.
And then the benefits of them, of course, they don't physically crash. Have a certain lifespan, though.
They do.
And they're really fast.
Yeah. They do have lifespan issues. I mean, they do have writing issues. It's not like, oh, you put it in there and everything is roses. But from an end user point of view, you can just think of them as being that much faster.
They have less battery use. They use less energy.
Much less.
They don't necessarily, but they can. The better ones definitely do.
And Ben, you kept on saying that hard drives and computers are 7,200 RPMs. Most laptop hard drives are 500 RPM.
5,400.
5,400.
Sorry.
Yeah.
or 40
and some are even 42. Yeah,
42, but yeah, 4200 RPM. So yeah, I mean that a lot of times that's the bottleneck in a computer. You know, is that what's the slowest point?
But the faster you go, computer, the more power you're going to use. So if you want longer battery life, you want to get a slower hard drive. It's a give and take, man.
It always is a give and take.
Unless you want to go very fast with an SSD, but that means you don't have the same storage space.
Right. Or you have to pay a lot more. I mean, with this new roadmap, you know, ideally, if that happens relatively soon, if they release these, 600 gigs is a lot. 600 gigs is a lot of space, you know.
Yeah, we'd never be able to fill that up.
I would never make that point.
You did 2 weeks ago.
I almost did.
You totally did.
I nearly did. I didn't say we won't need more than 1 terabyte.
Okay, so I'm
that's
going...
the past.
Leave the past in the past.
Stop clinging on to the past.
Okay, so moving on, I'm going to inject a new story in here, and this is going to be completely different. We're going to jump less from the tech world and more into the social realm.
And now for something completely different.
Right. Blogging has become much more prevalent. Everyone blogs now, and many people have even more
people's than... People's cats blog.
Yeah, have more than one blog. Yeah. Well, cat owners with the cat as a pseudonym, but anyway...
I love that you issued that correction.
Miles doesn't like cats.
Well, no, it's just more of like cats are doing it. Yeah, it's kind of like if I put up a blog bonsai, it's just
if I had a cat, I would totally make it a blog. It would be just censored, automatically photographed.
I do think that there's probably a cat blog, a legitimate blog. Cats walk across keyboards all the time. You know?
I'm going to make a chicken blog when I get my chicken coop wired
right
up.
Now
we put a keyboard in there.
No, yeah, totally.
We make jokes about this. These are the silly type of blogs.
Sure.
But there is a type of blog out there that is pushing the envelope, especially with regard to press. For a long time, bloggers were not considered really members of press. They were more like, oh, they're just regurgitating the news stories that they get from elsewhere. This is breaking that mold. It's a blogger who is a 20-something going to university in computer security. Or I don't know if he's still in university. He lives in Mexico City, and he is covering the drug war in Mexico. This is important because with the drug war in Mexico, the drug lords, you know, obviously are very violent, and it's hard to get information out there. They have been threatening reporters for any bad coverage. There have been a lot of reporters who have lost their lives because of it. And then you have the government, which doesn't want embarrassing information coming out or aid going to the bloggers. This person set up a blog and has actually been very effective in keeping his identity a secret, which is important for his safety, mm-hmm. Assuming it's a he. But he's been posting – he's been the go-to place for people trying to find out information about the drug violence going on in Mexico because – anyone can post there as long as they have legitimate news. So you have stuff coming from the drug lords, the drug cartels on there. And you also have stories of like video footage of a local sheriff or judge who was releasing prisoners so that they could run errands or perform hits or do tasks for the drug cartels because he was paid off. Wow. And because that information got out, he was then arrested. Mm-hmm. And so the information is
definitely real journalism.
It's the reason, it's the reason for the press is to have that shine a light of day. And mm-hmm. it's really interesting seeing the technology behind that. Of you have a blog, this technology that we are all familiar with now, but really taking on that role of press, and also doing it in such a way that he is effectively anonymous.
It's cool,
and having the effect that you would normally want to have in the press, where you can't normally do that if you're open press down there. That's great.
Yeah. So that was just an aside.
Yay, blogs.
Yay, blogs. And let's see, who has... Oh, Lindsay has a lot of news. So you get to pick whatever you want from there. You are a go-to girl.
Yay, I get to pick whatever I want. Okay, let's do the Pirate Party, just because it sounds fun. The Pirate Party strikes a hosting deal with WikiLeaks. So I'm sure you've heard that WikiLeaks released more than 90,000 government documents last month related to the war in Afghanistan, and they were labeled a serious threat by the U.S. government. And so the leaders, when they try to enter the country, they usually get intercepted at the border, things like that. And they're trying to take legal action, but haven't been able to so far. One of the political parties has shown interest in helping WikiLeaks, and it's the Swedish Pirate Party. 2 weeks ago, they offered to host the whistleblower site, the WikiLeaks site. And during a visit to Sweden, Julian Assange, I don't know if I'm pronouncing his name correctly, but he accepted the offer and they signed a deal. The party is supposedly going to be voted into parliament next month. And they're hoping that that will happen because it can use parliamentary immunity to run the site from inside the Swedish government, making it impossible to take it offline through legal procedures. Mm. And so we're just hoping that that goes through.
It's a pretty cool story. I mean, that they decided to do that. It's interesting. We talked about WikiLeaks a while ago, and I felt like I really stuck my foot in my mouth because I was like, yes, openness, transparency, great. Yeah, GeekSpeak stands on that. And then like 3 days later, people are being killed because of it. Like, oh.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
There's some big implications for the WikiLeaks. Yeah.
Thank
you were talking about, didn't you say that you knew something about this party, the Pirate Party?
I know that they were formed because of the Pirate Bay, the torrent site, and people getting copywritten material, and the fact that the Pirate Bay didn't actually host the material. They hosted pointers to it, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And the issues having to do with that. And the Pirate Party was born of the ethic of, wait a second, there's a lot of stuff with copyright that doesn't translate well to the technical world and has become a lot more restrictive.
Mm-hmm.
But don't have time for that. Got a couple of announcements. Ben, really quick.
A quick announcement. The website went down. You're not crazy. It's back up. So you're still not crazy?
It's not completely back up.
It's on its way back up.
It'll be back up soon. And Lyle?
We're doing a live show in September, the end of September. I think it's going to be the 15th or 16th, somewhere in there. It might be the week later. Haven't totally pinned it down, but we're doing a live show in Santa Cruz County. You can come and watch us and engage and have fun. And let us know if you're interested in helping, because we need some volunteers to run doors. We also need a venue. So if you run a big venue, preferably downtown Santa Cruz, let us know. It's going to mark Miles and my 10-year anniversary of running GeekSpeak.
Dun, dun.
Put a face to the voice.
That's right. Oh, no, that's not a good idea. I mean, I'll wear a mask. All right. And then the website thing, yeah, it is still coming up back online. If you want to send us a note, you can't use the website because, of course, I don't have the Drupal site up. So email us. Geeks at geekspeak.org. That does work.
And once again, you are listening to GeekSpeak. GeekSpeak, of course, is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Shakespeare Santa Cruz, presenting The Lion in Winter in the Main Stage Theater, as well as William Shakespeare's Love's Labor's Lost and Othello in the Outdoor Festival Glen. Details online at ShakespeareSantaCruz.org. Once again, that's ShakespeareSantaCruz.org. GeekSpeak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support for businesses. Tech support for home computers, home and business tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBTech.com. And also, I would like to thank Lyle Troxell, Ben Woo-hoo. Jaffe, and Lindsay Lani for joining me this fine Saturday morning.
Thank you for hosting.
Thanks,
oh, yeah,
Miles.
Free t-shirts at the live show.
And free t-shirts Ooh. At the live show.
Can I get one?
Yeah, you can. Did you already get one?
No.
Oh.
Maybe.
I haven't gotten one yet.
Lindsay, we have another room. You can have one right now.
Woohoo!
And this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org.